Okay, girls, good morning. Let's begin. So we're beginning a new Mishnah, Mirtz Hashem, today. We are beginning a new Mishnah, Mirtz Hashem, today. And hopefully this will take us over the course. Girls, if I could have your attention, please. And this will, Mirtz Hashem, take us through, thank you, take us through the next week, and then Mirtz Hashem, before Purim, we'll do some of the Inyanim of Purim as well, focusing a little bit on the Megillah. So let's focus. We're jumping back a little bit to Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yud Zayin. So this year, as you're going to see, is a fascinating Mishnah, both historically, as well as just message-wise. So Shimon Beno Omer, Shimon, his son, used to say, we'll discuss who we're discussing in just a moment, all of my days I grew up amongst wise people. And I found nothing better for the body than silence. Again, we'll just use the translation over here. It's not the medrash, it's not, he translated it over here as, it's the theory. It's not the theory that's important, of primary importance, but rather it is action. And one who talks excessively brings about sin. So again, there are many seemingly straightforward lessons contained in this Mishnah, but I'd like to focus on a little bit over here is first, who is the author? Because already, what's intriguing about this? So Shimon Beno. So first of all, okay, so we know, again, you don't have it in front of you, but if you were to look in the previous Mishnayos, you would see that we were quoting Rabbi Gamliel. So therefore, again, we see that who is being quoted over here? None other than Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Now, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, understand, was the Nasi of the Jewish people. He was the head of the Jewish people, specifically during the times of the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. So now that you know that he is the Nasi, what's intriguing about this Mishnah? Right, why would you call him, first of all, why would you call him Shimon? That's number one. Why not call him Rabban Shimon, as he was known? And first of all, again, why identify him as Beno? In other words, we understand that ultimately, if you call Rabbi Shimon Gamliel over here, that he is the son of the author of the previous Mishnayos. So really a twofold question. Number one, why refer to him ultimately again as Shimon? Number two, or as opposed to Rabban Shimon. And number two, why not go ahead and, well, why not use his title Rabban? That's number one. And number two, why add in the appellation of Beno, the son of Rabban Gamliel, when we know, in fact, of course, just in the Mishnah, that it's his son. So hold on to that just a little bit. So let's go a little bit of, today we're going to focus a little bit more on the historical context. So understand, Rabban Gamliel, as we said before, is the Nasi, is the head of the Jewish people at the time of the second Churban Beis HaMikdash. So understand, as we've studied, because the truth is, if you think about it, interestingly enough, almost all of the Mishnayos that we've studied over the course of this year have all been from that same basic time period, the time period of the Churban Beis Sheni. So therefore, again, we don't have to go into all of the background because you're already experts and proficient in the historical background of the Churban Beis Sheni. But one thing we can say for sure, which is, it's an exceptionally turbulent period of time. So remember, again, there's ongoing aggression with the Romans. Now understand, I'm not sure that we ever spoke about this concept before, but at this point in time, even before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so Eretz Yisrael was already a vassal state to Rome. There was no real independent Jewish autonomy. We were already under Roman control. The Romans stationed a group of people called, in Hebrew, the Netzivim, in English, Roman procurators, bless you, who were essentially Roman governors who were in charge of Eretz Yisrael. So what did they split up Eretz Yisrael into multiple different provinces, and these Roman procurators, these Netzivim, controlled these areas. What did they do? They exploited the Jews and pretty much took everything they could. You have to understand, if you were a Roman procurator, so essentially you were given a governorship for a certain amount of time, until which time you were going to be called back from Rome. Now remember, again, obviously communication is very different, so we're pretty much, you could do whatever you want in Eretz Yisrael, and what? No one's going to know. So what these governors, these Roman governors, often used to do is they would levy exorbitant taxes. They would do anything and everything in their power to take as much wealth as they could during the time that they were in Eretz. So then when they would finish, they would go back to Rome. A lot of it they would pocket themselves. Some of it they would send back to the government. So that's what's happening to the Jewish populace at this point in time. They're literally being taken advantage of by these merciless Roman governors. add on to that, that there's massive infighting with the Jewish people, within the Jewish people. So remember, we've seen this already before when we were talking about Rabbi Yochanan and Ben Zakkai. So remember, again, there are two primary groups. Who are the two primary groups in Yerushalayim at this point in time? The Rabbanim and the Bar Yonim. Right? Not everybody was on the list of the Rabbanim, but the point is there were those who argued for a diplomatic resolution to the issues with the Romans, and the Bar Yonim wanted armed conflict. And this led to massive infighting within the Jewish community. So the point, if you take a look at number two, we've actually seen this Gemara again, but let's just take a look at it again, just to give us a bit of historical context. Shadra Iluya Las Banyanos Caesar. So remember, again, the Roman emperor, the Roman Caesar, sends Vespasian to lead the siege against Yerushalayim. Also Tsar Alot Tlas Shani. Vespasian lays siege to Yerushalayim for 3 years. Havu Bo Hano Atir, Tlasa Atiri. There were three rich men. Remember, we've seen this before, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. There were three rich men. Who are the three rich men? Nakdimon ben Goryon, ben Kalba Savua, uben Tzitzis HaKeses. So the Gemara just points out that, of course, none of these are their actual names, but rather, again, these are descriptive names. Nakdimon ben Goryon, Shenokdalo Chama Ba'avuro. This was the incredible miracle described in Maseches Tainis, where the Jews borrowed wells from the Romans. And if they would not pay back by a certain point in time, there would be excessive fines imposed upon them. A miracle occurred. On the day of repayment, the sun did not set. The sun remained in the sky till it began to pour, filled up all of the wells. Ben Kalba Savua. Why was this called Ben Kalba Savua? Shekhal Nichnas Labesu Kishuraev Kikelev Yote Kishav Zaveh. Because if you walked into his home, Ben Kalba Savua literally means what? Literal translation. The son of the satisfied dog. Okay, it's not among the most popular kids' names, right? So what does it mean, son of the satiated dog? Because the Gemara says that he was such a Baal Tzedakah that even the most impoverished person who was starving walked into his home and would be satiated. Ben Tzitzis HaKasas was so wealthy, Shahisa Tzitzaso Nigreres Al-Gabi Kistos. He was so wealthy that he did not walk on the ground. Wherever he walked, ultimately he walked upon cushions, pillows. And so his tzitzis never dragged against the ground. They always dragged against the cushions. So the Gemara says, Chad Amar Lehu, Arna Zaynalu B'dechidi B'sari. So amongst these three men, they decided that we will support the residents of Yerushalayim. One of them said, I will provide wheat and barley. The other one said, I will provide wine, salt, and oil. And one of them said, I will provide wood. So if you put this all together, pretty much, you have enough to sustain the people of Yerushalayim. And the Gemara says that ultimately, again, they had enough wealth between them to support the Jewish people in Yerushalayim. This was for 21 years. That's how much wealth there was. What does 21 years give you? 21 years for what? But what else? Negotiations, right? So 21 years buys you a lot of time. The time to be able to talk to the Romans, the time to be able to reach compromise, the time to be able to figure out what it is that we need to do regarding this circumstance. And that was the goal. Essentially, these three men said to the Rabbanim, we're going to support the residents, giving you time to figure out a resolution to this particular issue. Fine. And we know, how does the story end? The Bar Yonim burnt down the storehouses. The Bar Yonim, who wanted armed conflict, understood that if the Jews were fed and satiated, there would be no impetus to go out to war. There would be no motivation to go ahead and wage battle, and so they burned down the storehouses. But of course, knowingly or unknowingly, when they burn down the storehouses, what happens? What happens? It plunges Yerushalayim into immediate famine. So remember again, I don't know what the Bar Yonim had in mind or didn't have in mind. I'm not sure that they meant to create an immediate crisis where people would literally be dying on the street, but that's exactly what happened. People literally, again, were dying on the streets from famine, and there was nothing left in Yerushalayim. Vespasian on the outside, nothing on the inside. So I'm just giving you context. This is when Rav Shimon Gamliel is the Nasi. So remember again, we've been much more focused during this time on the leadership of, the leadership of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the leadership of Rabbi Akiva, But just understand that the political head of Klal Yisrael, the religious head as well, of Klal Yisrael at this time is none other than Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So that's what's happening in Yerushalayim. A couple of other complicating societal factors. There is a fundamental breakdown of the Kahuna Gedola. What was happening with the Kahuna Gedola at this point in time? So the Gemara says, take a look at number 4. The Gemara Masechas Pesachim writes, Aleim the Alkiyotzev em Amar Abba Shal ben Batnis, Mishum Abba Yosef ben Chanin. Oili mi beis baitus, oili ma'aloson. So if we take a look at Rashi in number 5, whose baitus, Rashi says, Kohen Gadol haya, v'chein kulon, V'haya lahen avadim chamsanim v'choftin esha'am. What does that phrase mean? V'haya lahen avadim chamsanim. What's a chamsan? I'm sorry? Right, what does chamas mean? So, Rab, but interestingly enough, chamas also means something a little bit different. Not just regular robbery, but it could also mean almost like a type of extortion. Often it's utilizing power to be able to extort and get things that you are not rightfully entitled to. So the Gemara is saying over here, he had these great rabbanim saying, woe to us from Baitus. Baitus was the Kohen Gadol. Why? Because his servants are extorting the populace. Oili ma'alasan. Woe to us because of their sticks. So again, what do you begin to see over here? There is a breakdown of the Kahuna Gedola. And the Kohen Gadol, as well as his household, were extorting and using their power to accumulate wealth. Now understand, this makes a lot of sense. Because at this point in time, historically, how was, or who became the Kohen Gadol? How did you become the Kohen Gadol? You bought it. At this point in time, the Romans were in charge of the institution of the Kohen Gedola, and essentially it went to the highest bidder. Which is why, by the way, the Gemara says that over the course of the 400 plus years of the second Beis HaMikdash, so again, there were an incredible number of Kohanim Gedolim. And contrast that with the first Beis HaMikdash. Why? What was happening to the Kohen Gadol every single year? He was dying when? Yom Kippur. So remember again, Yom Kippur is the great litmus test as to the sanctity or the piety of the Kohen Gadol. Because again, if you were not fit, you went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and you did not come out. So again, amazingly enough, the office of the Kohen Gadol, which is supposed to be the most sacred office in the land. Remember again, Klal Yisrael always has a two-headed leadership. What's our two-headed leadership? Right, a melech and a Kohen Gadol. Where does this two-headed leadership model come from? Okay, even earlier, Yaakov Avinu in Parshas Vayechi already says Lo Yasser Shevet Mi Yehuda. So Yehuda is the monarchy, Levi is religious leadership, and it's now again to be clear, the king has to be a tzaddik also. Right? It's not the pshat that the king is just a political and military leader and not pious. The king is supposed to be pious also, but there's a recognition that the king has to be the political military leader, and you need another leader who is really devoted to the spiritual welfare of the populace. The king also has to be dedicated to the spiritual welfare, but there's almost like a split in responsibilities. So ultimately, again, we see the Kohen Gadol, which is supposed to be the seat of religious leadership, has become absolutely, fundamentally corrupt. It's being sold off to the point over here that you see, listen to this, listen to the rest of the Gemara. Oili mi beis kasrus, oili mi klumo sehen. Woe to us, Rashi says, from beis kasrus, this was another family, and woe to us from their quills. So apparently, the house of kasrus, we'll see. Oili mi beis yishma ben piachi, oili mi grofein. Woe to us from the family of Yishma ben Piachi, and woe to us from their fists. Literally, they're beating us up. Shehem Kohanim Gidolim, because all of the people mentioned here were all Kohanim Gidolim, Ubenehen Gizborin, and they put their sons in charge of the temple treasury, V'chasnehen Amarkalin, and they give their sons-in-law other positions of influence, V'avdehen Choftin Asa'am B'maklos, and their servants go out beating up people with sticks. Why are they going out beating up people with sticks? Ultimately, again, to extort money. So again, Just so you understand what's happening in greater society. We've got the Romans on the outside, and we are imploding on the inside. Leaving aside what happened with the Baryonim and the three rich men in Yerushalayim, that was just Yerushalayim. But remember again, there's a fundamental breakdown of Judaic society. The Kehuna Gedola is corrupt. So the office that is supposed to be used to inspire people instead is fundamentally taking advantage of people in the most difficult of times. So this is the state of affairs under Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Now I'll tell you something amazing. Yet in the midst of all this, what does the Gemara say? Take a look at number 6. This is actually quite beautiful. Tanya, Amru Alav Av Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel, Kishaya Sameach Simchas Beis HaShoeva. When he would rejoice. Remember again, when was the Simchas Beis HaShoeva? When was it? Sukkis. When during Sukkis? Chalamayit Sukkis. Right? So during Chalamayit Sukkis, and they would have these great celebrations in the Beis HaMikdash. Hayanotel Shmona Avukos Shalar. Listen to this. He would take 8 torches, Vizorek Achas, Vinotel Achas, Ve'inogos Zubazu. What are Shimon Gamliel do? Juggle fire. So first of all, isn't this, what's intriguing about this? He is the Nasi, right? Can you imagine seeing the Gadol Hadar juggle 8 torches altogether? So we're going to see what the power of this is. Because Shumishtachava, and when he would bow down, he was apparently exceptionally, what's the word? I guess we'll call it acrobatic. Mishtachava, noet shnei gudlov ba'aretz v'shocha, v'noshek es haritzba, So again, I don't know what you call this in English, but essentially what he was able to do was as follows. He was able to bend, I'm not going to demonstrate for you, but he was able to bend his body just by his ankles. So if you can imagine, he was standing upright, he was able to bow down without bending his knees or anything, back or anything, bow down straight just by manipulating his ankles. Literally, again, put 2 thumbs on the ground, kiss the ground, so to speak, of the Beis HaMikdash, and then lift himself back up. So the Gemara says this was Kita. And when Rav Shimon Gamliel do this, he did the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. So you can imagine who was the life of the party, Chalamayit Sukkis, in the Beis HaMikdash, none other than Rav Shimon Gamliel. He's juggling 8 torches, right? He's going ahead and doing this Kita. So why does the Gemara tell me this? What do you think? What's the message here? What do you think? So first of all, on a very basic level, and we're going to see that this is going to be exceptionally important, Rav Shimon Gamliel was there to be misameach the people, even in the midst of difficult times. And this is going to be an incredible yisod. What is the role of the leader during times of difficulty, challenge, and turbulence? What is the role of the leader when at the end of the day there are so many things that are in such a fundamental state of disrepair? Rav Shimon Gamliel, at least on some level, felt that it was his job to lead, and we're going to see many of the things that he did in terms of his leadership, but we also see that Rav Shimon Gamliel felt that his sacred mission was to inspire the people with simcha, even in the midst of difficult times. It's hard to get the image out of your head. Can you imagine showing up and the Gadol Hadar is juggling? I mean, anyone juggling 8 torches of fire is pretty impressive. But can you imagine seeing the Gadol Hadar do this, or these acrobatic feats? It's absolutely incredible. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was saying, okay, yes, the world is imploding. It is. And that's belish shum guzma. That's no hyperbole. It's not exaggeration. The world as they knew it was imploding around them. But how do we keep the people anchored? How do we keep some level of simcha? How do we maintain some type of positive or optimistic disposition? And Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Nasi, who clearly felt the weight of the cloud on his shoulders, did small things that were within his power to maintain and to restore some level of simcha. Let me show you something else that he did, which I think is incredible. Take a look at number 7. So number 7. So this is from the Sefer Chachamim, so written by Rabbi Lau. So he writes over here as follows. Really an incredible idea. So Yeshnan Kama Eduyos Hamatzbios Alkach Sherav and Shimon Ben Gamliel Milei Es Mekomo Shel Aviv Bahan Hagaso Haruchanis Shel Ha'ir Ad Lemosu Bahamim Mahalech Hamer. So we're going to discuss We're going to discuss Rav Shimon Gamliel's death later on, not today's class. But clearly, again, Rav Shimon Gamliel becomes the Nasi, and as the Nasi, he's the Memala Makom. His father, Rabbi Gamliel, was the Nasi. And when it's, now, again, to be clear, just so you understand, the Nasi, the Nasius, is not necessarily an inherited position. Meaning it doesn't, just because your father was a Nasi doesn't automatically mean that you become the Nasi. You have to be fit, you have to be right. The truth is, it's the same thing in Jewish monarchy as well. The son of the king doesn't automatically become king unless, of course, he is fit. Where do we learn, who is the example, that positions of greatness are not inherited? The paradigmatic example of this? Moshe Rabbeinu. Remember again, this is the difference between leadership and the kahuna. Remember again, kahuna is inherited. Kahuna is absolutely inherited. Moshe Rabbeinu, remember again, this was by design that Moshe Rabbeinu's children did not assume his position. Who, remember again, who takes the reins and Moshe Rabbeinu dies? You know, Yoshua. Why Yoshua? Why? What was the phrase? Lo yamush misocha ohel. Yoshua was a distrusted disciple. You want to take on the reins of the leadership, you need to be with the leader. You need to learn from the leader. You need to take direction from the leader. Moshe Rabbeinu's sons did not do that for whatever the reason. Yoshua was the memale makom of Moshe Rabbeinu. So Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, was the memale makom, filled the void after the passing of his father, not because he inherited it, but because ultimately, again, he earned it. Litzarinu, this is incredible, by the way. Litzarinu, lo nostru b'mekoros chazal amiros rabos mitoras oshoch achamzeh. Amazingly enough, we actually do not have many teachings from Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Rov ha-mekoros ha-maskir mes Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel miskavlin l'nechdo nasi yisa b'dor usha shela'acher mered bar kocha. See, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is mentioned many times throughout Shas, but it's not this Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It's actually the grandson of this Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who again lives in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba Rebellion. Again, remember, Bar Kokhba Rebellion occurs when? Approximately 60 years. Excuse me. 60 years after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So amazingly enough, we do not have... sorry. We do not have... many teachings from this Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. We have many more from his grandson who lives later on. Yeshna ma'at mekoros shebehem mechavein mikimo eskor Hashem Rabbi Shimon Gamliel tkufas habayis. Mishna achas misaperes al takhana shor Rabbi Shimon Gamliel liyitzuv hamatzava kalkalia kashe b'yushalayim erev achorban. So here, Rabbi Lau quotes something amazing. He quotes, we do have some rulings, very few rulings, but some from this Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Now this ruling you're going to see is absolutely incredible. The reason I'm sharing this with you is because it gives us a window into the personality of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. This was a ruling that took place, what he calls Erev HaChorban. Erev HaChorban means what? Right? Right before that. What does right before mean? Sometime before. But the point is, remember, we've seen enough historically to know that even Erev HaChorban, what's the status of affairs? Not good, right? Really bad, right? Serious is complicated. Exceptionally complicated. Internally and externally. So what's the rule? And this is amazing. Paragraph Beis. Ma'aseh sha'amdu kinim b'yushalayim b'dinei Zarev. One time, kinim. Now what are kinim? Kinim are Pairs of birds, bird pairs. One time, there was an incredible spike in the cost of birds. Birds to the point that to buy a pair of birds ultimately cost a dinar, a gold dinar, which was an exorbitant amount of money. Now, why is this important? Who has to bring bird offerings? Now, remember, who? A woman. Excellent. This is going to be the focus over here. A woman, after she gives birth, has to bring a pair of birds, right? This is the carbon, one of the parts of the carbon of a yoledes. Now watch this. Rav Shimon Gamliel, hamon hazeh. Now understand. So we'll first read it, then we'll explain it. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says hamon hazeh. Maon means I swear by the Beis Hamikdash, lo alin halayla at shub dinarin. I will not go to sleep tonight until I find a way to bring down the cost of the birds from a dinar zahav, gold dinar, to a regular dinar. What did he do? Nichnas lebezin v'limeid. He went into the base medrash, and they came up with the following halacha. Isha, sheyesh ala chamesh ledos vados, chamesh zivos vados, mevien karban echad v'ocheles bezvachim, ve'ein hashar le'achola. So watch this. Rishulim said as follows. If a woman has given birth five times, or a woman becomes a zava five times, without getting into all the technicalities, we know that zivos means if a woman has an emission that's not menstrual in nature, some other type of emission, without getting into all the technicalities, that makes her a zava. So Rav Shemuel says, a woman gives birth five times, or she becomes a zava five times, what did he institute? He instituted mevia karban echad, which means what? So let's go back. What would you think the halacha was before?
Every time.
Every time. Let's leave aside zivos. Let's deal with childbirth. Every single time a woman gives birth, she has to go ahead and what? She has to bring a karban yoledes. Rav Shimon Gamliel came along and said, obviously, the Gemara is giving us, this Mishnah is giving us this halacha shorthand. So understand, Rav Shimon Gamliel walked into the Beis Medrash and decided, poof, to make it like this. There was a whole drasha, there was a whole shiur, there's a background to this. Rav Shimon Gamliel said as follows, up until now, the halacha has been that every time a woman gives birth, she has to bring a karban yoledes. One part of that is a bird offering. Now, Rav Shimon Gamliel says the halacha is that a woman could bring one karban for multiple births. For multiple births. So what did he just effectively do? Save them a lot of money. Understand. Let's go back for just a second. Why were the birds so expensive? Right? Because remember, again, think about it. Right? Baruch Hashem. So again, if the carbon that a yoledes has to bring is a bird pair, chances are birds are in high demand. Are in high demand. So because they're in high demand, again, I don't know if this was an issue of supply and demand or this was just an issue that the bird vendors understood that they had the ability to charge a lot of money. So they did. So what Shimon will do, suddenly he says, instead of having to bring a bird offering for every single birth, you could bring a bird offering, one offering for multiple births. And ultimately, again, that's one offering. So a woman has four children, so you have to understand something. If a woman was having children in one after the other, so it's quite possible that, again, she just never made it to Yerushalayim in between all of the, or Baruch Hashem, in between having children. So she can have a situation where Baruch Hashem, she's had three children, right, in the last couple of years. Now she finally feels well enough and together to make it to Yerushalayim. So now she's got to catch up on her bird offerings. So up until before Shimon Leal, she's bringing one bird offering per birth. Shimon comes along and says, one offering takes care of all of your births. Or one bird offering takes care of all of the episodes of Zivus. And amazingly enough, within the day of this new legislation, the price of a bird stood at one quarter of what it was before. So there was a three-quarter price decrease from before the enactment till after the enactment. What's dramatic about this? I mean, it's interesting, but what's dramatic about it? What do you see about Shimon Gamliel? Okay. I'm sorry? His influence, good. What else?
He actually did it. He didn't just talk about it.
Oh, excellent. Remember again, this, by the way, excellent. This idea that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel sees a problem. And what does he do? You see, you know what happens in life when we see problems. What do people like to do when they see problems? They like to talk about the problems and lament how terrible the problem is. And they'll talk and they'll talk and they'll talk and they'll talk and tell you, oh, the problem is terrible in every way. There's only one thing they don't do, which is take action to fix it. The great Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is, he sees a problem. He sees a problem and he goes forward and he fixes it. What else? What else? Right. So first of all, again, clearly it was the right course of action. Excellent. What else? Remember again, think about this just a moment. I just told you the historical context about what's happening around Shimon Gamliel. What's amazing about this? He's focusing on the needs of the regular people. Remember again, society is falling apart. The Romans on the outside, corrupt Kohanim Gedolim, warring factions within Klal Yisrael. And yet Rav Shimon Gamliel is occupied with the needs of the common person in day-to-day life. Look at paragraph Gimel. Isha yoledes chayeves lahavi karban la'achar halida. A woman gives birth. She's obligated to bring a carbon after birth. Apiyat Torah. Rotzui lahavi karban me'atzon. Achim lo matza yada deyse. Hi yechola lahavi karban shal tziporin. So remember again, this is exceptionally important. So remember again, in the aftermath of birth, a woman is supposed to bring a carbon. Mm-hmm. Ideally, she's bringing a carbon from a sheep. Who brings birds? Who brings birds? Someone who is poor. Well, Lashon Hara Kri, I mean in birth, who's bringing birds? Someone who's poor is bringing birds. It's only if you don't have the money to be able to go ahead and purchase regular livestock, will you go ahead and bring birds. So watch this. HaMishnah HaMetzutetes Kan Mita'eres Mitzius Kalkalit Kasha. The Mishnah over here is describing a very difficult financial milieu, a very difficult financial situation. Mechirat Tziporim LeKarbon, Hu Hon Asok. So this is amazing. Who does the price of birds impact? Who does it impact? The poor people. Remember again, for the regular person, Baruch Hashem, who is fine financially, the price of birds doesn't make any difference. Because I'm not bringing birds. That woman is not bringing birds anyway. She's bringing a sheep. Because Baruch Hashem, she has the means. When the prices of birds go up, who is impacted? Who is affected? It's none other than the poorest segment of society. Api Mishnah Zu, Yoder Rav Shimon Gamliel as Tafkido, Ka'achroi al Tikun HaChevra, Va'al Yitzuv HaChayim HaDatiyim. This is an incredible phrase. Rav Shimon Gamliel understood that he was Achroi. Achroi means what? Responsible. And again, you'll keep this in mind. One of the hallmarks of leadership is being a Baal Achrayus, taking responsibility. Don't just talk about what's broken, don't just lament what's broken, figure out a way to fix it. Figure out a way to remedy it. Rishon will understand. Now, there's something else. By the way, what's going to happen if the price of birds becomes too expensive? What's going to happen? They won't be able to bring. This is incredible. Now, what does that mean? Why won't they just scrounge the money together? They'll sell the shirt off their back. Because that's not what people do. Meaning, at a certain point in time, what happens if Yiddishkeit becomes too complicated? What happens? People drop it. Rav Shimon Gamliel understood that this was about, you see, one of the most important, we're beginning to see so many insights into leadership. The job of the leader is to demonstrate to the people, Derachecha Darchei Noam. The Torah is pleasant, and the Torah is beautiful. And if there's something unpleasant about Yiddishkeit, or there's something just ridiculously overwhelming, chances are we need to do something to remedy that. We need to do something to address that. Rosh Hashanah says, if these are the paupers, these are the poor people, already again they're given an accommodation to bring birds. If birds are going to be too expensive, then what happens? They're going to stop doing it. And what happens to their Yiddishkeit? What happens to the Kiddusha of their home? Rosh Hashanah sees an achrayis to step in. Takano zu shumetakin hi kalkalis greido. V'chol matarasa lahachnis tzibo rachav lemisgeres hanurmitivit shamishtamshe beis hamikdash. What's the goal over here? Rosh Hashanah does not want anyone excluded from Beis HaMikdash life. It can't be that the Beis HaMikdash is the arena for the rich. But yet again, if you don't have, or if you're impoverished, or if you're poor, there's no place for you. Everyone has to have a place in the Beis HaMikdash. He goes on, Kishemechir kam b'Yerushalayim u'dinar zav, isha lo makriva, u'minatekes me'akodesh. If the birds become too expensive, a woman is not going to bring her karban yoledes, not because she doesn't want to, but because she will be priced out. And if she's priced out, understand what happens over here. She not just the pshat that she hasn't brought karban, that she's in violation. But what happens when she doesn't bring her karban? She's outside of the Beis HaMikdash. She's outside of the normative framework of Jewish life. and it's only a matter of time until that takes its toll on other areas of our Yiddishkeit as well. Yesh gvul l'sevoles hatziburit ulenachon nechonos lakravas hon atak. People are willing, Jews are always willing to spend money for their Yiddishkeit. But at the end of the day, there's a ceiling. There's a limit to what I can do. Paragraph Dalit. Rav Shimon Gamliel matakin es halacha shelo al pi din haTorah. Eis lasos l'Hashem hefaru sarasecha. What does that mean? Eis lasos l'Hashem hefaru sarasecha. What does that concept mean? Sometimes, right? Eis lasos l'Hashem. Sometimes you have to take a stand for God by negating precepts of the Torah. Now, do not try that at home. That's not for us, right? But sometimes the Gedolei Hador understand that sometimes certain smaller things must be compromised in order to maintain the greater good. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, what does the halacha say? What does the Torah say? When does a woman have to bring a burnt offering? How many? Right? When? After every birth. After every birth. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, but again, so here's what you could do. You could go ahead and tell her to bring after every birth, and what's going to end up happening? She won't bring anything. She won't bring anything. Because that's the reality. Now understand, by the way, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel must have already seen this unfolding. Meaning, again, he must have already seen that this was happening in greater society. So, we can either go ahead and maintain things as they are, and this segment of the population will just simply become disenfranchised and disassociated, or we can go ahead and modify the halacha for the purposes of maintaining the greater good. Either the concept of the Khan disappears altogether, or what we say is instead of one bird offering per birth, one bird offering can take care of multiple. Understand what that does. What that does is that allows women to, so to speak, catch up on their obligations without breaking the bank. What it also does is severely diminishes the need for supply. If you diminish the need for supply, then what? The bird merchants have more supply. If you have more supply, if you're a merchant, you're a bird seller, you have more supply, then what do you need to do? Drop your prices. Why? To move your merchandise, right? This is like economics 101, right? You have more merchandise, you want to move it, lower your prices. So again, what happens? Suddenly you create a new economic paradigm in society. One bird pair for multiple births, drive down the prices. And by the way, what happens when you drive down the prices? What happens when you drive them down? See, ultimately, again, equilibrium will reset itself. Then you might have women who are willing to go ahead and bring the bird pair after every birth, right? Again, if the birds are affordable and the birds are reasonable, I know what the halach is, I know what the dorais is. The dorais is bring a bird offering for every birth. So if I'm a woman and I just gave birth, even if I'm impoverished, but if the birds are relatively inexpensive, I'm going to do that. So Rav Shimon Gamliel goes in and makes a takana to stabilize, or really not to stabilize, but to diminish prices, so as to allow people to remain connected to the Beis HaMikdash, remain connected to Yiddishkeit. Zehu ma'aseh no'ash shel chacham, shelo yachol haya lehisbatzea ilmalei haya lo ma'amad isan bekrav hanhagas harabanes bas tekufa. Gam yosif v'sheno chasha avas yesh Rav Shimon Gamliel omer. So this is amazing, brother. And again, I'm not doing justice to like the halachic background to this, because understand, even the Gadol HaDor cannot just get up and decide, you know what, we're doing things differently. The halachic underpinnings of this are much more complex and intricate than I'm sharing with you today, because it's not our topic for today. We don't have to get into the halachic, you know, nuances of it. But understand, it wasn't just Rav Shimon Gamliel says, hey, let's change it to this. No one has the power to just change anything on a whim. It requires deliberation, it requires consensus, it requires a cogent halachic argument, other halachic sources. The point of Shimon Gamliel dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's. But here's what's amazing. Here's a man, and this is incredibly important, who understands what's happening all around him. And what does he understand? The future of Klal Yisrael is predicated on an adherence to our halacha, an adherence to our Mesorah, an adherence to Torah. And if Torah becomes too difficult for the common person, they're just simply going to check out. So Rav Shimon Gamliel makes an accommodation so as to allow, again, those on the lowest economic rung of society to remain connected. Even if you're poor, Never feel priced out of your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Never feel priced out, ultimately, again, of your relationship with the Beis HaMikdash. It's amazing. So he quotes over here from Josephus. So Josephus discusses it with Shem and Gamliel, and he writes, last three lines in source number 7, Ha'ish hazeh hayimaleh das veruach chachma. Ultimately, and so even Josephus, who wasn't necessarily the greatest lover of the Jewish people, despite being a Jew himself, has these incredible words about Rosh Hashanah Gamliel, that he was a man who was filled with wisdom, with spirit, and with understanding. And only such a man could allow the Jewish people to remain connected to their Mesorah in the midst of such difficult times. So there are incredible things that come out from this Rosh Hashanah Gamliel. Number one, as we said before, the having the courage to not just see a problem, but willingness to take decisive action to fix it. Number two, you see Rosh Hashanah Gamliel says, I'm not going to sleep until I fix it. Sometimes even once we say we're going to fix a problem, we don't necessarily feel a sense of urgency. Rosh Hashanah Gamliel understands that if you don't do something with an urgency, what usually ends up happening? It doesn't happen. It just doesn't end up happening. So number one, there's a resolve to take action. Number two, a resolve to take action immediately. And number three, a profound sense of care and concern for who? Even the most common of people. Rosh Hashanah has so much on his plate now. But you see that again, he is focused even on just the poor woman. I don't mean like the poor woman, I mean literally like the economically poor woman who gave birth. This is his concern. I don't want to lose the fringes of Klal Yisrael. It's easy enough for the fringes to become disenfranchised. We must do what we can to hold on to every Jew. We must do what we can ultimately to make everyone feel enfranchised, to make everyone feel included, to make everyone feel connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his Torah, and his Beis HaMikdash. All right, we'll stop over here for today. We'll continue with this Mishnah Me'ir Tashem on Wednesday.